Track 5, Alison's Orkney Trip, Part 2. Well, I'm afraid you're going to have to listen to my voice quite a bit today, because next up is the continuation of my trip to the Orkney Isles. And if Gal Tina made a shiver with her tales of wintry weather, then you will still feel a bit of a nip in the air here, because the weather in Orkney certainly didn't get any better. Here we go. It's still blowing a gale on the archipelago of the Orkneys, lying in the sea 8 miles north of John O'Groats. Later we'll hear about the Churchill barriers built at the beginning of the Second World War to defend the British fleet anchored in Scarpa Flow. But will we ever get to see orcas, dolphins or otters? Let's begin this final visit to the area though by heading well into the past. Completing the stunning sights of Neolithic Orkney are two impressive stone circles, the Ring of Brodgar and the Standing Stones of Stenness. The Ring of Brodgar was probably erected between 4,000 and 5,000 years ago and features 36 monoliths, 27 of which still stand today. The stones range from 7 feet to 15 feet in height and form a near-perfect circle 340 feet in diameter. They're surrounded by a rock-cut ditch which was once 7 feet deep and 21 feet wide. Whilst its exact purpose has not been established, it's thought to have been a convening place for ceremonies, feasts and commemorations of the dead. It may well also have charted the cycles of the moon and the sun. The Standing Stones of Stenness form one of the earliest stone circles in Britain, comprising 4 stones rising to 13 feet in height and dating to at least 3100 BCE. The circle would have been an important focal point and, like the Ring of Brodgar, may have enjoyed a ceremonial and ritual purpose. The effort to put the stones in place would have been monumental, and it's been estimated that it would have taken 50 people 6 months working flat out to move and erect the stones. Quite a feat. But it's not only constructions from the ancient world which are of interest on Orkney. Nearer to our own time, the impact on Orkney of 2 world wars has left its mark. Many of you will have heard of Scarpa Flow. This immense expanse of deep water covering 125 square miles is the largest natural harbour in the Northern Hemisphere. And during both World War I and World War II, it was the main anchorage and headquarters for the Royal Navy's battle fleet. Scarpa Flow provided natural defences in the form of narrow access channels between the islands from the east, west and south, which could be defended against enemy ships and submarines. In addition, to protect the narrow passages between the 5 islands on the eastern side, a number of ageing coastal steamers were sunk, leaving their rusting hulls sticking out of the water and becoming known as block ships. Unfortunately, this form of defence was proved to be inadequate when, in October 1939, soon after the beginning of World War II, a German submarine slipped undetected into Scarpa Flow and launched a torpedo attack on HMS Royal Oak with the loss of 833 crew. Winston Churchill, who was the first Lord of the Admiralty at that time, visited Orkney and ordered the construction of 4 permanent barriers to fill the watery gaps between the islands. The work began in May 1940 using labour provided by Italian prisoners of war and involved quarrying 580,000 tonnes of rock and putting into place 66,000 concrete blocks created from 330,000 tonnes of concrete. Today, these barriers, known as the Churchill Barriers, have transformed accessibility across the islands, providing natural causeways for vehicles. But the Italian prisoners of war turned out to be more than just ordinary labourers. Among their numbers were a blacksmith, a cement worker, an electrician, and an artist. And these craftsmen created a tiny, ornate, and exquisite building, which is known as the Italian Chapel. The chapel was built between 1943 and 1944 by covering two Nissen huts with concrete on the outside and coating them with bituminous felt. The corrugated iron of the inside of the hut was hidden behind a facade of plasterboard, which was then painted with trompe-l'œil brickwork and carved stone to give the impression of tiles and stonework friezes, and an altar and altar rail were moulded in cement. Lanterns were fashioned out of bully beef tins, and a bell and candlesticks were taken from the rods of a stair on one of the old block ships. The overall effect is one of great beauty and spirituality, and one of the prisoners explained why so many of his fellow countrymen invested their time and emotion in the project. He said, "It was the wish to show first oneself and then the world that in spite of being trapped in a barbed wire camp, with one's spirit physically and morally deprived of many things, one could still find something inside that could be set free." After the prisoners left at the end of the war, the chapel deteriorated, although its fame grew. Eventually, the artist on the project, Domenico Ciocchetti, was traced to his hometown in Italy, and in 1960, courtesy of the BBC, he was brought back to Orkney to restore his work. On his return home, he wrote an open letter to the people of Orkney, saying, "Dear Orcadians, my work at the chapel is finished. The chapel is yours for you to love and preserve. I take with me the remembrance of your kindness and wonderful hospitality and the joy of seeing again the little chapel where I, in leaving, leave a part of my heart." And so, despite the vagaries of the weather, our sojourn in Orkney provided us with the opportunity to see many thought-provoking examples of life on the islands through the ages. Our only disappointment was that the promise of sightings of whales, dolphins, seals and otters was not fulfilled. We didn't see any, and I can only conclude that these creatures were as challenged by the meteorological conditions as we were and stayed out of sight. Did we have better luck on Shetland? Well, that's something you might find out another time, perhaps. So it's bye-bye Orkney, and next month it'll be hello Shetland. Hang on to your hats.